1925 Giants Place. That's the address of the Giants practice facility. Eli's car is parked in the same spot every single day. And that's because he's the first person in the building. And when I see things in organizations where, you know, a lot of people are struggling with employee retention and leadership, well, are you doing what you say you're going to do? That's one of the most important things and one of the biggest leadership lessons that you have to have. Are you doing what you say you're going to do? Hey, I'm Benny Fowler, 8-year NFL veteran of the National Football League, Super Bowl champion, best-selling author of Silver Spoon, The Imperfect Guide to Success, and partner at Portico Business Strategies. I'm here on The Game Plan.
Hey, Game Plan faithful. Welcome back to another episode of The Game Plan with Jay Kapoor and Tim Cott. Every week on this show, pro athletes share their stories and lessons to help you raise your game in business and in life. As always, I'm your host, Jay Kapoor, this week bringing you a important and fulfilling conversation with Super Bowl champion Benny Fowler. Now, Benny's story in some ways is not dissimilar from some of the conversations that we have had on The Game Plan so far. As you know, we love to chat with household names as well as the unnoticed and undrafted players that went on to make a big name for themselves. Benny had a tremendous amount of success playing at Michigan State, and like many of his colleagues, expected to get drafted into the NFL when that time came. But unfortunately for him on draft day, Benny didn't hear his name called. And I think that's where his story goes from being ordinary to remarkable. Benny used that opportunity to drive himself forward and find a role on a growing Denver Broncos team that eventually went on to win the Super Bowl. In fact, I believe Benny was Peyton Manning's last ever touchdown catch. Benny also played with other leaders like Eli Manning on the Giants and Drew Brees on the New Orleans Saints. So I made sure to ask Benny about the different lessons that he learned from each of those men and how he's applied that in his life, both on the field and off of it. True to our show, we talked with Benny about what he's doing in retirement today as a partner at Portico, working with growing companies to help them on business and leadership coaching. We talked a little bit how business coaching is different from business consulting, and the kind of services that Benny has been able to offer the companies that he works with. You know, some of our listeners that are more familiar with the venture capital world will think, well, isn't this advice and insight that these companies should be getting from their investors? But remember that venture capital is not the only way to build successful businesses. In fact, most businesses in the US are actually built without venture capital. They're self-funded, they're revenue funded, they are customer funded. But those founders and those leaders still need to have an independent board of advisors or trusted individuals around them that can give them impartial feedback to help their businesses succeed. Benny mentions that a lot of his athletic success came as a result of having great coaches, which is why he remarked on the fact that most business people don't have coaches of their own, and Benny Fowler is hoping to change that. Well, that's enough for me. Why don't we jump into my conversation with 8-year NFL veteran, Super Bowl champion, best-selling author, and partner at Portico, Benny Fowler. Benny Fowler, thank you so much for joining me on The Game Plan.
Jay, I appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate you.
Yeah, listen, I've been following some of your content. You've got some really great things to say, so I'm glad that you're going to be sharing that with our audience. Let's dive into the beginning a little bit. You know, one of my favorite quotes is, chips on shoulders, put chips in pockets. And you're an undrafted player who played for the better part of a decade with some really great teams, some all-time greats. So I feel like that's a sentiment that you're going to resonate with. How does going undrafted into the NFL change how you approach, you know, your journey, your preparation, and then just your relationship with the NFL and playing the sport?
I think it definitely helped me understand. It really gave me a life lesson that regardless of what you do in the past, that does not carry over into the future. And the reason why I say that is because at Michigan State, we're coming off of the Rose Bowl. We win the Rose Bowl. We go 13-1. We win every Big Ten game in our conference by 10 or more points. Never been done. So you think that the seniors are going to get drafted, and you think, you know, you got some other people that are going to get drafted, and we only had one person off that team get drafted. So it was a life lesson in terms of not getting drafted. I wouldn't say I necessarily had a chip on my shoulder going into the NFL because I knew I could play and had former teammates go to the NFL and have some success. So I knew and I had that belief that I could play, but you definitely want to hear your name get called on draft day. It's one of the highlights that you dream about as a kid, and it didn't happen. But there were definitely perspectives and there was a lesson in there. And my dad had told me at the time, right after the draft was over, there are plenty of undrafted players who have made a story about this or who have done this already. So what you're getting ready to do can be and will be done by you. So it's your choice. You have the perspective of, okay, I didn't get drafted, or you can look at the fact that your phone is ringing and there are 16 teams calling. Life is all about perspective and what are you going to focus on? So definitely it gave me a little bit of a chip on my shoulder for life, not necessarily just the NFL.
I love that aspect because it's something that, you know, we talk about as investors with entrepreneurs a lot. Every entrepreneur feels like when they're coming and pitching an investor, the investor just wants to hear about all the successes they've had. But in fact, those of us that have been around this realize like entrepreneurship isn't sort of all up and to the right. It's up and down and squiggly and backwards. And it's my favorite conversations with entrepreneurs are always the ones where it's like, this was the failure that I thought in that moment was a failure and really is the lesson that is setting me up for success today. And it seems like, you know, the word that you use and is the one that I think is really great is perspective from that standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, that's what, it's not just even entrepreneurship. I think entrepreneurship really takes on that aspect, but I think it's just life in general, the ups, the downs. If you think about even some of these corporate CEOs, my dad was vice president of Ford, COO of Jaguar and Land Rover, done incredible things. There was a lot of ups and downs. I mean, Ford's super profitable and then the recession hits and then he has to move over to London and he's trying to turn that company around in terms of Jaguar and Land Rover. They're losing $250 million in the next 4 years. He leaves there, they're making $750 million. But that's a little bit of a stressful time. There's a lot of down times and then, you know, then some good times. But how do you navigate those tough times? And there's nothing more that speaks to it than entrepreneurship. Entrepreneurship is, like you said, it's like being on an NFL team. You want the owner to invest in you. But there's 53 who are all making their pitches in terms of how they're performing on Sunday, how they're practicing, how they're showing up on time, who they are in the locker room. And then you have these politics. There's so many different things. It's just like life. And that's why I love to do what I'm doing now in terms of helping businesses grow so they can scale and their systems and processes in a culture of performance, because that is literally the same thing in the NFL.
We'll touch on that in a second. I do want to make sure we talk about some of the great players that you got to play with and learn from. I mean, we're talking some of the all-time great NFL quarterbacks, right? Drew Brees, Peyton Manning, Eli Manning. You've caught balls from all of them. And each of those men has a legendary work ethic, has a different way that they, as leaders. So what are some of the lessons that you took from each of them, and which ones do you continue to reflect upon in your post-NFL career?
I reflect on them all the time in different situations and different life scenarios. But if I think about Peyton and the way he kind of just approached the game, I mean, this is a guy who was number one in high school, number one in college, number one draft pick to the Colts. I mean, it's only a couple players who have lived up to all of the hype since the spotlight was on.
Yeah.
I think it's Peyton and LeBron are really the only two who have been in the media spotlight since they were in high school, college, in the pros, and did everything that they were supposed to do, from MVPs to championships to playing long careers. And I think that speaks to him. So when I think about Peyton, just how he was able to handle things in the moment, but also his level of preparation and his ability to adapt. When you think about leadership, you have to have a vision for where you want to go, company or in sports or just in life. You have to have a vision for where you want to go, but you have to be ready to adapt and be willing to adapt. And Peyton was like that. I mean, he would have the third string quarterback on Mondays watch the TV copy of the game film to see if any code words or signals were picked up so we could change them for the next week and can confuse the team.
Yeah.
For next week by using the same signals and code words. Only he is thinking that far ahead and in advance. So that was something that was incredible that I learned from him. From Eli, I mean, I think I tell people this all the time, like 1925 Giants Place, that's the address of the Giants practice facility. Eli's car is parked in the same spot every single day. And that's because he's the first person in the building. And when I see things in organizations where, you know, a lot of people are struggling with employee retention and leadership, well, are you doing what you say you're going to do? That's one of the most important things and one of the biggest leadership lessons that you have to have. Are you doing what you say you're going to do? And Eli was that. Now, he wasn't a big rah-rah guy, but you could catch Eli just sitting at the table with a couple different guys, all different positions, telling stories. That's how you build camaraderie. That's how you build a culture. When you get up to a top level, a CEO level or C-suite level, the people under you, so to speak, want to learn from you. They want to know how you got there. They want to know those things so they can gravitate to all those things and learn. And Drew, all these guys have a level of preparation, but the culture in New Orleans was unmatched. And that comes from Sean Payton, but it also comes from Drew Brees, the two longest tenured guys there. And they don't add anybody into their culture who doesn't fit. Doesn't matter if how good you are. Does this person fit into our culture? Where do they fit into our culture? And that's what Drew did. I mean, Drew came out here to Denver and we had a conversation. He was actually coming out here to work out with a teammate of mine for the Broncos. We're working out and he was like, who are you with? And I was like, I'm a free agent right now because the pandemic had just started.
Yeah.
And he was like, I got to give Sean Payton a call and Mickey Loomis, the GM, then we're going to try to get you there. But Drew had, you know, we talked for a couple of days and was like, and, you know, he got a chance to see who I was and how I acted as a person, my work ethic. And I think things like that are important. I was actually just talking about this with a friend, is that in football, we have these little mock scenarios and situations to see how a person fits on a team. How do we bring that into business before we hire on somebody? That way,
yeah.
It's a little bit easier in sports, but that way you can get the right person on the team. Like, why do they really want to be there? Why do they want to be at your company? Or do they just have the great resume that looks super good? Because if you look, I played 8 years in the NFL. And if you look at my resume in college compared to the people who were coming out against me, their resumes look a lot better than mine. But I played a lot longer than they did.
Yeah. Along that journey, and I love the call out there about recognizing talent. I want to touch on that a little bit as we talk about why some companies succeed over other ones. We tend to think hiring and, you know, getting the wrong people on the team can be just as, you know, impactful for you the wrong way versus getting the right people on the team. But we'll get to that in a second. You know, along that journey for you, you know, self-doubt creeps in for everybody. I know it's not something that, you know, the most successful people, they don't live in a state of doubt. But I also tend to find that a lot of entrepreneurs, you know, when we are chatting with them, you know, there can be moments of that doubt. There can be, well, I don't know where I'm going to find that next hire. I don't know how we're going to close that next customer. When you found moments of doubt in your professional playing career, or maybe even with some of the entrepreneurs that you work with, what are some ways that people can overcome that doubt to keep moving forward?
Well, even when I hear you talk about it just now, I hear I. And how do we make it we? Because one of the things that, you know, solopreneurs go through is that, you know, they're always by themselves. Entrepreneurship, yes, there are some lonely times, but how do you set yourself up with a good team? So you don't feel like you have to do it alone. I have to do this. When self-doubt has creeped in with me, I have people to lean on. I have a fiance that I can lean on. I have my brother that I talk to. I have friends that I talk to, and I can express these certain things and I can get different points of view, and then I can formulate it into what I do best. Mm-hmm. But everybody feels like we have to go through this journey by ourselves. And I don't even like the term self-made. It's impossible to be self-made. You have parents, you've had people along the way, you had people that you didn't even know were vouching for you in rooms that you weren't even in. So you don't have to do it alone. And we're always going to face self-doubt. So I think one of the things that has helped me with self-doubt, and I struggled with it early on in my career, my playing career, even in my entrepreneurial career, because you're like, oh, it shouldn't happen. No. When you're doing something great and you want to do something great, some doubt is going to creep in. Like, can I really do this? Or what is this idea that I'm trying to do? But that's a good thing because you're trying to do something amazing. So understanding that it's going to be there is one of the best things that you can do, is embrace it. Like, yes, understand, okay, on those days where the vision is super clear, roll with it. But then understand that there will be some days where there are some downs. And when you have that awareness and you know it's going to come, it's a little bit easier to navigate. And it's one of the things that I learned playing professional football is like, there is no perfect game. And our coaches say that we want to try to play close to a perfect game, but it's not going to be a perfect game. We're going to make mistakes. So how do we move on from those mistakes? And that's where the real lessons come, is in the failures. and then the mistakes and trying new things and trying different things. But just don't let the self-doubt, like not living in the self-doubt, like you said, is super important, but it's going to be there. Even the most successful people, they're probably doubting something right now, probably just for only a second though. And then they ignore it.
Yeah, I reflect on something that one of our mentors told us when, you know, we started raising our fund, which is like, hey, remember that you're doing something really hard, right? Making it to the NFL, like how many college players are out there and what small percentage actually make it to the NFL? What small percentage make it past that first 2 to 3 year hurdle? And I think there's a level of that reminding yourself that you are doing a thing that is hard is in a way, doesn't legitimize that doubt, but it gives rationality to it. It gives you reason to have it, which is to say that, you know, you're doing a hard thing. Entrepreneurship is hard. It's okay that you have this doubt. And so, you know, you were basically echoing exactly what we heard as we were doing something difficult, which is somebody saying, hey, remember, you're doing something difficult. It's okay.
Yeah, 100% of the time. I mean, yeah, you're doing something hard. Life is hard. It's worth it. Building a business hard, it's worth it. Going to the NFL is hard, it's worth it. Like,
yeah,
building a business is the hardest thing somebody can ever do.
Mm.
It's the hardest thing in the world.
Yeah. So you have a lot of conviction around the business that you've been building and, you know, your entrepreneurial journey, advising companies, you know, providing them with coaching services. So help me understand, you know, what is Portocol Business Strategies? What exactly is business coaching? And why was this something that really became a calling for you?
Well, I love football, but I don't want to coach football. I don't want to watch film and because I've done it for so long and just be around. Like, I love going to games. I want to just be a fan now. So that's why. But coaching is something that is needed in the business world because of the same thing that is going on a football team or a football organization. You know, you got your C-suite, you got your owner, you got your C-suite, you got your general manager, you got your head coach, assistant coaches, and players. And that's exactly how companies are structured. It's the same thing. You have entry-level employees, you got your C-suite, which are your coaches, you got your managers, which are, you know, kind of captains and assistant coaches, and then you got your employees, which are the players. And how do you put the best product on the field? How do you work with revenue and profit? You know, that's, I think that's super important. So what Portocol is we do business and leadership consulting, and it's a team of four of us. Myself being a ex-performer or professional athlete, and then we have a couple people who have built and sold multiple companies, a former CFO and a former COO. So we, as together, are an incredible team, but we help companies build their revenue and profit 3 to 10 times through strategic clarity, because clarity brings power, a culture of performance. At the end of the day, that's what it's about. You need to have a culture of performance, not just a culture, but a culture of performance, systems and processes to make sure that business is scaling. Because when companies start to grow, they grow too fast and the systems and processes aren't in place, things will break. And that's where things and that's where growth will stall. And then you need to develop your emerging leaders within the company. You develop the emerging leaders within the company. You're not working in the business. You're working on the business. You're not in the day to day. You're not trying to figure it out. No, you have it figured out. Now you're bringing people up within your company who can even perform with even more autonomy.
Yeah.
And the way that actually, you know, relates to football is you have to have a culture. You have to have that where you have to have the strategic clarity. Where are we going? Are we a team that can win a Super Bowl right now? If we're not, if we're in a rebuild, where are we trying to go in the next couple of years? Do we have that culture of performance? What's our culture like? Do people love to be here? Or the chance of free agency, do people want to leave right away? So what's our performance of culture? What are our systems and processes? What's our systems and processes to help our developing players, our players who are in their later years, and how are we successful? Do we have a process to win and repeat that? Like the Patriots, they have a system and process. They can plug and play guys. The Packers, plug and play. There are certain teams, the Chiefs, plug and play. You can see there's a reason why there are some, top heavy teams in terms of you know, who they are. They have a system and process, especially Mike Tomlin, the Steelers. These coaches have been there for a long time. And then developing the emerging leaders. How are you bringing your rookies along? Are your rookies developing throughout your entire program? Are your employees developing? Are your employees working their way up? My dad started down at just a plant manager at Ford. Wow. So he knew how the plant was supposed to run. Then he became an area manager. Then he came a corporate asset, and then he went over to Jaguar and Land Rover, and then he came back to the United States and vice president of global quality and manufacturing. But he started at the bottom, and he worked his way up. That way, he knew what was going on. So you can't really get anything around him because he already knew everything. So how do you developing the emerging leaders within your company? So that's what we help companies do. And then there's a leadership component to it, and there's a mindset component to it. And that's what we bring. So we're a one-stop shop, four-person team. We don't just give you a 70-page report and say, hey, now figure it out. We're a consultant. We're with you every single step of the way to help you grow that company where you want it to go.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that because I think when most folks think of consulting, you know, maybe in their mind they have like McKinsey or Bain and BCG, and there's sort of like the, you know, research consulting aspect of it. Then there's like transformation consulting. And then, you know, what you're talking about is like business leadership, culture. Is there a right time for a company to engage a business coach? Because I think of it like for the perspective of a startup, right? That's who I work with most of the time. Most of these companies are 2 to 10 employees at the time that we're investing in them. Everybody is kind of in one room. If, you know, these days in remote, they're all in one Zoom. And at some point you sort of think like, well, does a company at that stage need a business coach or business consulting, or do they wait until they're much larger and the problems have already started? So I'm curious, when's the right time to engage?
The right time is when you get the awareness to it. And not everybody understands what we do,
yeah,
how we do it. We come in at a 360 business assessment. Where do you want to be in 5 to 7 years? Let's come up with a 6 to 12 month plan. But what's your current state? What's the next state you want to get to? So I think, especially at the startup point, if you can avoid it later on down the road, why would you wait to get to the problems if you can solve them right now? And then if you have everybody strategically aligned, especially at the early stage, it's going to make it that much easier when you continue to grow, because then the culture is shifting on down through. Instead of having a culture and then you have to weed people in and out because you didn't take care of it at the beginning, what is really your standard? The standard for the startup, that has to continue to carry on down as the company gets bigger. And that's where companies tend to struggle, is because these 10 people right here, they have equity in it. And then they start hiring on people who don't have equity, and then you want them to live up to the same standard. So how do we avoid that?
I guess thinking about the kinds of companies you work with, can you share some examples of, you know, customers, whether it's size, industry, experience level that you've worked with? And maybe let's just use culture as an example, right? Like what is an example of a process that you would take a company through in order to get their culture from, you know, A to where they want to be?
Yeah, every company is different. We don't have a cookie cutter approach. So we'll start with that 360 business assessment. And that's where we're working with the owner and partner, or even just the leadership team. Let's get strategically aligned. We're going to sit around. We're going to sit down for about 4 hours, 2 hour sessions. Let's get strategically clear. Where are we going? Are we aligned on every single thing? Do we have the trust? Do we have the communication? Do we have the good conflict? Do we have the performance measures? Do we have everything in place? Are we all on the same train? Or is everybody going different ways? And then what is the culture about? Has everybody been here the same amount of time? Does everybody know what the culture, what it should be? Are we all aligned on the culture? Do we have a collective mindset around the culture?
How do you define the culture? I think that's the hardest thing for a lot of people.
Yeah, we don't define. We pull it out of everybody. What does this company want to be a part of? We shouldn't define your culture.
Yeah. Okay.
You define the owner, the C-suite. They define the culture because it's got to resonate with them first, and then it has to trickle on down. Those sessions right there is how we kind of pull it out of people.
Yep.
Talk to them, yep. Give them certain examples. But the culture, when you're working with a team of culture, we were just working with somebody last week on it, and he's like, I haven't worked on the culture as much, but he said, my culture, my standards should be, people should be talking about it outside of the building. It's like, okay, mm-hmm. like, yeah, we can work with that. Where people love going to work, or we hit, this isn't a client of mine, but I love his culture. It's Matt Ishbia of United Wholesale Mortgage based out of Michigan. And I've gone onto their campus. I've seen things. I see how they operate. They have an incredible culture. By the way, I'm going to say this again. This is not a client of ours, but this is a culture that I love. And I just think he's done really well. But a culture of somebody, they're proud to be there.
Yeah.
They're proud that they work there. That's a culture that you love and that you want to be around. Go ahead.
It's an often overlooked piece of building a company. And I tend to see this a lot with especially sales-driven founders. You know, I think product founders, it's a little bit different because, again, they're so focused on building something they can ship. But I think when you have sales-driven founders, their success for so long, especially at those early stages, is really about, can I close the next deal? And then as the company scales, you're going from a sales-focused founder to now I've got a layer of salespeople, you know, that I have hired. It's their job to close the customers. So what am I doing as a CEO? Well, mm-hmm. now it's about building the company. There's that, have you ever watched the movie Steve Jobs? But he has this great quote where he goes, the musicians play the instruments, I play the orchestra. And I think that's a lot of that shift that has to happen from, let's say, like an early stage founder into a growing company is the CEO realizing you're no longer playing an instrument, you're now playing the orchestra. And a lot of founders struggle to make that move.
100%. And that's where we come in too. I mean, mm-hmm. we just talked with an incredible company that's growing super fast. They don't need us for growth, mm-hmm. but they're so busy that no one has any time to pick their head up. So there's mm-hmm. something off in terms of the systems and processes.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be growing so crazy. First of all, they've added on new employees. They're doing super well. So there's something missing. You're adding on new employees, but you're still overworked.
Yeah.
There's something off with the systems and processes. How do we step you off? Let's look at this from a 70,000 foot view. Now, what do you see? What needs to be fixed? Let's implement that. And let's get everybody else on the same page.
How do you guys think about working with companies in different industries? I always find this challenging as an investor, right? We all have certain areas that we have experience with. If I see something that's a really, really hard, deep, you know, space tech or something really molecular biology, that's not a world that I know. It's hard for me to advise a founder on that aspect of the business. Given that you work within companies across a lot of different industries, how do you get comfortable advising them when you're not necessarily an expert in that category?
Yeah, if we're not a fit, then we let them know right up front. Mm. Yeah, if we're not a fit, hey, we can't help you really grow your revenue and profit 3 to 10 times because we don't have the expertise. We'll glad you point you in the right direction. We are not the type of like, oh, we just need the business. No, we definitely, if we can benefit the company, we definitely will. If we can't, then we definitely put you in a different direction. We're not, we do it all.
Yeah.
You know, for companies that are super huge, that are making over 300 million in revenue, that our expertise is that's probably working with their leadership team, not actually mm-hmm. their revenue and profit systems and processes. They're already super complex. So we have different things.
It's helpful. And I think it's good advice for a lot of founders because again, you're working with entrepreneurs, you're working with leadership teams, but you're an entrepreneur yourself. Knowing when to say no, sometimes it can be hard because you're saying I'm turning down, you know, revenue, I'm turning down clients, but you're saving yourself headache in the long run if you feel like you're not actually going to be able to provide the level of service that you're talking about.
We're saving ourselves reputation too. I mean, at the end of the day, it's all about reputation and we want clients to refer us because we're doing good business, not because we're doing a lot of business. And the client experience is the most important thing. And if we're not helping them grow like how we know we can, what's the point of actually bringing them on?
Are there common pitfalls that you see a lot of companies now, you know, across the board, doesn't matter industry or size, are there two or three things that you feel like a lot of people get wrong? And maybe what are the ways that if our listeners, you know, that are entrepreneurs, they can start to maybe avoid those early on?
The number one thing that I think is that strategic clarity on where you're going. where do you want to be in 5 to 7 years? Like, really think about that. What are you doing different? How are you acting as a CEO and as a founder? What's different? Or in 5 to 7 years, do you still want to be doing the same things that you're doing right now, super in the business? So I think thinking about that and getting that strategic clarity, who's doing what, who's involved, what are the KPIs? I mean, I'm talking about super in depth, you know, what's your product? What's your product strategy? What's your marketing strategy? I'm talking about every single detail. Let's hammer it all out and let's look at it. And then what are your strategic areas of focus for the next 90 days, 6 months, 12 months?
So why do you think leaders don't do that enough? Because to me, again, maybe to our listener, it seems like, well, that's kind of obvious, right? But why don't you think more folks are sitting down and going through that exercise?
I think they are. I think some are. But are they going to it through the level of detail? And then do they have a non-biased set of eyes?
Oh.
Well, hey, so, you want to grow. Oh, hey, you say, I want to grow like this. But you're not doing anything right now to grow up to get there.
Yeah.
So let's get aligned on everything. Or the CEO has this incredible vision, but he or she is a visionary and they're up and down. And then you have your integrator who is like, wait, what are we doing? Wait, what are we doing every week? Because the CEO or the visionary is getting just all over the place. That's how I am as a visionary. And, you know, on our team, my teammates know that. They know my strengths. They know I have different ideas and like they have to hone me in. So I think there's just different things. And are there ways and opportunities for the people on the leadership team to speak up without the founder and the partner, you know, really like, wait, you can't say that. This is what we want to do, you know, really having that input. So there's a lot of back and forth. There's a lot of human element and human error in that. Everybody knows goals and strategic clarity, but oftentimes we find companies or we find people who have that, they have a good vision, but none of it leads up to the 5 to 7 year plan of what they're doing right now.
I think the point on bias is actually really interesting because it's when you're so in the business, you know, everything feels critical, everything feels crucial, everything feels urgent. And it's when somebody from the outside perspective can really look at it and say, I don't know why you're spending all this money on X. I don't know why you're supporting so many engineers in this business, but you guys aren't actually shipping product. I feel like sometimes that's our role as investors to share that feedback. But yeah, I mean, not every business also has venture capital. Not every business has a team of investors around the table. Sometimes these businesses are self-funded. And it's hard to take a dispassionate look and say, yeah, I might have to shut down a business line so that the rest of the business can succeed.
Right. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, that's why building the business is one of the hardest things that people will ever do, because you're going to have to take that look. But if you're so in it all the time, how are you going to be able to see?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why football players have coaches, not necessarily to tell them to be better players. We're already at the top level. It's just a different perspective. Like, hey, maybe you should try thinking about doing like this. Most of the NFL coaches, I would say 70% of them didn't play pro ball.
Yeah.
So, but we still have them. You need them. You need them for the perspective. You need them for the integration of the plays. You need them to help you run the day-to-day, to understand what the other team is doing. That's the point of business coaching. Is we help you understand what the competitor might be doing. Or, hey, did you try this area of focus? We don't make you take any decision, but we throw these things out here because the founders of this company, my partners have built and sold multiple companies.
I think the interesting distinction for a lot of folks, right, especially the ones that are coming from a traditional venture capital startup world, realizing how, you know, small a piece of the overall venture and of the overall entrepreneurial ecosystem that venture capital actually is. You know, there are many, many, many more times the number of businesses out there that are not venture capital backed, that are self-funded, that are revenue funded, that maybe have a little bit of private equity money, but, you know, they don't have a executive sort of, you know, like a board or a board of advisors that are working through them working with them on this stuff. And having an outside perspective, having somebody like you, having your partners who have built these businesses come in and sort of be that third party And then, I mean, I like the terminology of coaching because, yeah, you're right. You know, Bill Belichick, I think probably the last time he played ball was, in college, right? But he has built a winning culture despite not having been playing at the professional level. And I think that's an important aspect to make because there's a lot of great venture investors that have never actually built billion-dollar businesses. There are a lot of great private equity investors that never built, you know, businesses. But they understand the needs of the folks that they're working with the same way that you guys understand the needs of the companies that you're working with.
No doubt about it.
Yeah. So shifting away from the business a little bit, I'd love to talk about some of the work that you've been doing. Because the way I found you is some of the great content that you're putting out on LinkedIn. You've started to build your own content and media platform. You've written a book. You've done a podcast, a YouTube channel. So talk about this idea of building your post-NFL brand. Why was that important to you, and how did you get started building that?
Yeah, I would say after I left the Denver Broncos is when it started. So I went and played for the Chicago Bears, not even play any games there. But I went there, and I didn't go there with the same mindset that I had when I first came into the NFL and got cut. And then my now fiance asked her to move with me. She's my girlfriend at the time. Asked her to leave Denver, leave her job, because I thought I had everything figured out. And here I am getting cut. And, you know, at home for the next 4 to 5 weeks, like, you know, if the NFL doesn't come calling back, what am I going to do? And that's where I had the idea to write my book, Silver Spoon, The Imperfect Guide to Success. And I wanted to get on stage and speak and tell my story and really just the stories of the incredible players that I had played with up until that point. And I ended up getting picked up later by the New York Giants and played 2 years there. But during that time, it was just like, okay, I don't have a lot of control over this NFL thing. I thought I did, but I don't really have a lot of control over it. And I had been cut a couple times after that and just a lot of ups and downs. And it was like, all right, I need to find something stable because if the NFL, you know, isn't going to come calling back, you know, what am I going to do? So I chose entrepreneurship, keynote speaking. And I got introduced to this guy by the name of JP Flom, who's out here in Denver. He's an executive and executive coach, works with a lot of CEOs and builds businesses. And we were going through a discovery session. He asked me what I wanted, asking me my goals and me to get really clear and what my values were, things that I had never, ever thought about. And it moved me to tears. I was crying for like 20 minutes. And I was like, wow, these are the conversations that I want to start having with people. I want to help people live and lead into their full potential. And that led me to go to the coaching school that he went to. I got some of the same certifications that he did. And, you know, just putting myself in different situations to try to succeed and really figure this thing out. And that's what led me to partnering with my partners at Portical. And then also I partnered and I do some business development for Z3 Talent, you know, the number one executive retained search firm out here in Denver. And both of these companies align with who I am as a person, putting people in a position to win.
Yeah.
And that's what I try to do with my podcast, with my book, any conversation that I'm having. How can I put somebody in a position to win? And how can I give value? I get real fulfillment out of having conversations like this. I mean, you and I just met a couple of days ago. I said yes immediately to the podcast. And I had already a couple of people in mind that I would love to introduce you to. It's because, you know, I think you can help them win. And that puts me in a situation or a position to be the quarterback. I'm just throwing the passes now.
Yeah.
And that's how it happened. And that's why I'm here. And that's why I'm trying to do just incredible things and just use my platform, my energy, my spirit to help people, but even have better lives.
Well, I think we also live in a really interesting time where, you know, you and I don't have big studios behind us, but we're able to put content out. We're able to share our thoughts and the right people are able to, you know, hopefully benefit from. That's why we do the game plan, right? I mean, this is not part of my day job, right? I'm an investor in my day to day, but I do this show because I think guys like you, and I especially love the conversations that we have on the show with, you know, the overlooked, the not first round picks, the not, you know, guys that came out the door and, you know, did 1,000 yards in their first season, but the guys that had to work their way up to Super Bowl champion. And I think those stories are always really interesting because that is the experience that most of us have. And if there's somebody that's listening today and they can take some of the advice that you had about, you know, perseverance, about preparation, about parking in the same spot every day because you're the first one in the office, right? And I mean that. I think our goals are very similar in that way. And the ability for us to use content to just enrich somebody's life, I just feel lucky that, you know, we're able to do that today. The content medium, whether it's podcasting, whether it's video, ultimately doesn't matter as long as it is improving somebody's life. So anyway, that was just me being sappy for a second. I guess ultimately what I'd love to know from you, what was the hardest? What is podcasting the hardest? Was writing a book the hardest? I mean, what medium did you find was the toughest for you to really get that story out?
Now, writing the book is the hardest because it has to be done right. It has to be done well. You know, it's like a first impression. And that was like my first impression trying to get out there. So the book was definitely the hardest process, but it was the most rewarding process too. So
how long did it take end to end?
About a year and a half.
Wow.
About a year and a half. Yeah. So it took a while, but it's not going anywhere. It'll be there forever. So it was awesome. So
there you go.
But it was definitely the hardest one. I mean, the podcast, you get on here, you have some fun, you talk and, you know, you deliver it. You just got to make sure it gets edited. But that book was... It took a little minute.
I can only imagine. Let's close, Benny, where we love to close with a lot of our guests. What is one piece of advice that, if you could, you would give your younger self?
Go for it. Don't worry about what other people are going to say. Because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what they say anyway. Your fulfillment, your happiness comes from you.
That's beautiful. Benny, that is a fantastic place for us to leave today's episode of The Game Plan. Thank you for your wisdom. Thank you for sharing some of the amazing things that you are doing post-NFL career, and especially the advice that all of us can take, whether college athletes, whether entrepreneurs, whether investors are listening today. Benny Fowler, really appreciated the time with you today.
Jay, I appreciate you, my man. Thank you.
So that's it for this week's episode of The Game Plan. As always, thanks so much for listening. A few quick shout-outs before you go. First off, a huge thanks to Super Bowl champion Benny Fowler for joining me on The Game Plan. You can find more of his work on his website, BennyFowler1.com. As always, our thanks to our editor, Emmanuel Maestri, as well as our production associate, Neil Kulkarni, for all their work producing and packaging this episode for your enjoyment. Our theme song is called Champ by Stuart Moore. Hey, did you know that you can watch as well as listen to The Game Plan? Head over to our YouTube page for awesome video content every week. Lastly, if you're still listening, you must be a huge fan of The Game Plan. Could you do us a favor and leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? We really appreciate it. That's all for now. We'll see you next week on The Game Plan.